You are now listening to Talk Loud Radio, sports, nerds, and pop culture.
Now, like every time I tell someone I'm a Heat fan, they always go right back to, oh, he must be a fan just because of Ron.
I mean, they were good at one point, you know, when they had Iverson.
So I would say you gotta subscribe to this podcast and my podcast.
What's up, podcast world?
What is going on, guys? All right, welcome to today's episode of GoingForTwo.com's press coverage podcast presented by Talk Loud Radio. I'm your host, of course, Jeff Lambert. You can follow me on Twitter at JeffLambert77. All right, guys, we have a great show today. It's been a while since I put a podcast out. I am hoping to change that in the near future. Going forward, I'm going to try to commit to record a podcast every Tuesday night to be published on Wednesday. So going forward, you hopefully will know when and where to find me every Wednesday, of course, here on Talk Loud Radio. If you are a first-time listener, Talk Loud Radio is home to actually three podcast shows. Of course, my show, the Press Coverage Podcast, which we do mostly sports talk, a lot of fantasy talk, daily fantasy talk, a little bit of everything in regards to sports. So we have my show, Press Coverage. We have the Pay Me No Mind show with Wood. He's the host of that show. He does a little bit of entertainment news. A little bit of pop culture stuff. He does some boxing podcasts. He actually covers boxing, goes to, you know, all the events local to his area and covers them live. So definitely check his podcast out, especially if you're a boxing fan, check him out. And then we have the guys over at clashofthenerds.com. They actually put out two shows. One of them is sort of They sit around, play video games, basically, and talk about some things in the quote-unquote nerd community. You know, different movies coming out, different rumors, you know, Star Wars, whatever's coming out. They talk about that kind of stuff. They also put out a weekly WWE recap show. I believe it comes out on Thursday, either Wednesday or Thursday. It's called Armbar. So they actually have two shows going for them over there. So definitely check out both of those shows. And of course, check out my show, Press Coverage Podcast, coming at you from now on Wednesdays. You can check us out. We can find us on iTunes. You can find us on Stitcher. We're on TuneIn Radio. We're on Google Play Music. Pretty much anywhere we have podcasts, you can find us. So please subscribe to us. And if you're on iTunes, if you could just drop us a rating, give us a comment, it helps us out with our rankings. So we can get some more listeners. So much appreciated if you can do that for us. All right, got a couple announcements before we get into today's show. One big announcement, if you haven't been to goingfortwo.com in a while, I know it is NBA All-Star break, and we're built around the NBA. You know, that's where most of our traffic does come from, is the NBA and NFL. But because it's been on hiatus for about a week because of the All-Star break, you may have missed our big announcement. We just joined in a partnership with Momentum Shift Radio. They have themselves over there. They have actually four shows. They are live radio shows. They are a Philly-based radio station, but they do pretty much everything in sports. They come at you live Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. They've got four different shows, and I'd be hard-pressed to name all of them right now. Let me see if I can pull up my... Yeah, here we go. So on Thursday night, they have the Study Hall with Frank, Jason, and Andrew. It comes at you live at 9 p.m. on Thursdays. On Friday, you may be familiar with already, is the Red Zone. Red Zone with Kelly and Rashawn. They posted their on-demand on our site for quite a while now. So they come at you on Fridays at 6 p.m. And then on Saturday, we have The Real Deal with Courtney Harden. I've been on his show quite a few times. He comes at you Saturday at noon. And then on Sunday, they just started a new show this past Sunday. It's called the Momentum Shift Weekly Rewind. Basically, all the hosts from those shows, plus friends of the show, you know, come on, do sort of a roundtable discussion of different topics throughout the week in the sports world. So you can check out their shows. Obviously, we have the on-demand versions once the show has been you know, published. We'll have the on-demand versions on goingfor2.com. But to check them out live, you go to blogtalkradio.com/momentumshift, and you can check them out live. They have a phone number you can call in, talk to the hosts, you know, sort of call in and give them your opinions on whatever topics they're talking about. So definitely good stuff there, yo. So just definitely check that out. Like I said, you'll get the on-demand versions on goingfor2.com. Let's see, what else is going on? Of course, the NBA is on hiatus, like I mentioned before. Should be coming back on Thursday. So, you know, definitely look for some new material coming out. We got a couple new writers that I'm excited to see what they put out. We have a NASCAR writer now, a fantasy NASCAR writer. He's going to write some daily fantasy cash game advice for NASCAR. So definitely excited about that. We got a few new baseball writers that are going to do some season-long baseball advice. Plus, of course, we'll do our regular DFS advice once the season kicks off. So super excited for what is in store for us coming up in the near future. For tonight, tonight's show, we're actually going to have Matt Sandell of goingfor2.com come on once again. He comes on. We talk about some NBA stuff that's going on, not necessarily fantasy related, just some general stuff. And of course, right now, you got a bunch of big things going on. Trade deadlines coming up. The Pelicans, my Pelicans, just pulled off a massive trade. So we'll definitely talk about that a little bit with Matt. But without further ado, let's go ahead and take a commercial break real quick. And when we come back on the other side, we'll have Matt.
Do you need advice for your fantasy football team? How about your DraftKings or FanDuel lineup? GoingFor2.com has you covered. GoingFor2.com has exclusive content from some of the best fantasy writers in the industry, whose credentials include Bleacher Report, Fantasy Pros, and Fantasy Life. From advice columns to player ranks, GoingFor2.com has it all. Sign up for our newsletter to have all of our content sent to your inbox. Start winning today. Visit goingfor2.com because no one remembers the extra point. Check the box.
Guys, welcome back. As promised, we are here tonight again with Matt Sandell of goingfor2.com. We're here to talk some NBA news and notes. Got a lot going on in the NBA. We just got out of the All-Star break. Had some pretty big blockbuster trades that we're going to talk about. Lots of things going on, some rumors that we're going to talk about as well. Matt, how you doing tonight, man?
I'm doing well. It's one of my favorite times of the year right now, except for the fact that there are no NBA games on for like the next week, which is pretty, it's tough, man. It's really tough. I know you're feeling the same way, but it just leaves more time for the GMs to start calling each other. And I love trade deadline time. I love player movement, guys getting traded, dropped, everything in between. It's a fun time in the NBA for sure.
Definitely, definitely. I can say though, as a Pelicans fan, usually this time of year is not a good time for us because we normally don't get those big trades, but we're going to go ahead and jump into the really big news, the elephant in the room right now. Of course, Boogie Cousins just got traded to the New Orleans Pelicans. My Pels normally don't get those type of trades, so I'm super excited about this. What is your instant reaction to this Boogie Cousins trade? What do you think of it?
I don't know why you're calling it the Boogie Cousins trade. I'm calling it the Omri Caspi featuring DeMarcus Cousins trade. No, the I got the update on my phone from Bleacher Report. I had seen some rumors about it. And the thing about NBA and their media department is they have so many like guys like Zach Lowe, Bill Simmons, Adrian Wojnarowski, like all those guys tweet out all these rumors all the time. And like 2% of them happen. And I thought this one was definitely going to be in the 98% that didn't happen, which was Cousins for Buddy Hield and some picks. And when I got the Bleacher Report update, I couldn't believe my eyes. I thought it was a joke or they tweeted it out too fast before it was like actually happened. But congrats to your Pelicans for getting a big name to come down there. That's a huge gift for it's truly unprecedented to have two big men of this caliber on one team. I can't really fathom a tandem like this down in the post at the 4 and 5. Can you think of any other comparisons like that?
I think the only time that's ever happened in my memory is David Robinson and, of course, Tim Duncan when he was
That's the only one that I can think of. I mean, these players are the best. They are the two best big men in the league right now, and they're playing for one team. It's going to be interesting to see how the chemistry and who – I mean, I don't think AD is not a selfish player at all. He is definitely a franchise player. You don't feel so much concern that he's going to get his priorities twisted or anything, or like Boogie's going to rub off on him or anything like that. I think this is a huge get for the Pelicans, and it's probably a top five blockbuster trade in the past 5 years. What do you think? I don't remember a guy like Cousins, a top 10 player like him, getting traded in like the last 5 years. I can't think of any right now.
Yeah, it's definitely a blockbuster trade, especially because it's a guy going to a small market. Usually it's a guy that's forcing a trade because he wants to go to a bigger market or to a contending team. You know, he basically, he traded up a little bit because the Kings, you know, also aren't really a good team. The Pels have a little bit more going for them. But at the same time, it's not like he went from Sacramento to L.A., which was the rumor that he was going to L.A. He went to, you know, New Orleans, which isn't a big city either. So I think that's sort of unprecedented in that sense, that it's just a small market team trade.
Absolutely. And I think the only trade that can be compared over the last 5 years is the Kevin Love for Wiggins trade was pretty big. Just swapping stars like that. But Cousins is a much better player than Kevin Love is. So I think this is the biggest blockbuster trade we've had in the last 5 years.
Definitely.
Somehow involves the New Orleans Pelicans.
Yeah, I was going to say, definitely, you know, it's not really expected for my team to do those kind of things. Usually we're the ones losing those big names, like, you know, Chris Paul, Alonzo Mourning, Larry Johnson over the years. You know, with those two guys that we've lost to trades or free agency, they've gone on to bigger and better cities. But my Pels did pull it off, and I was talking to a friend of mine, and, you know, I don't know how well this is going to meld right away. Like, I don't know if we're immediately contenders, for example, but I think what it does do is it makes us a little bit more of an attractive area, you know, for free agents. We got a couple big name free agents in this offseason that, you know, could potentially pick the Pelicans now with that, you know, that tandem of Boogie and AD, you know, as a contending, you know, place to go where they can actually contend for a championship with those two guys. So it does help us in that sense that we can get those big name free agents to come to visit our city now.
And another thing is, I don't think the Pelicans, there are only like 30 games left in the NBA season. I don't think the Pelicans are going to sneak into that eighth spot this year. I just don't see it happening really. But for next year, I'm pretty bummed about this trade as a Timberwolves fan, because you got like five spots taken up every year by the Warriors, Spurs, Clippers, usually the Mavericks. Now you got like the Rockets in there, and Utah's playing well. And so there's basically like three spots in the West each year that there's some variation in teams. Sometimes the Blazers get in, sometimes the Nuggets get in. But next year, I think the Pelicans are a lock for like the sixth or seventh seed. So that's just one more spot for my Timberwolves not to get into the playoffs. So I'm not happy about this trade.
Definitely. Your Timberwolves have got some talent, though, so you never know. We both could be in the playoffs next year.
And, you know, Boogie's team is going from – they were 9 games under 500, and the Pelicans are 11 games under 500. So he's sort of taking a step back here, but obviously he gets to play with his Kentucky alum, Anthony Davis, of course. And I'm sure Boogie is happy about the trade, but – I mean, the Kings were better than the Pelicans at the All-Star break this year.
This is true. We definitely had a bad start to the season. We've been playing better of late. But, yeah, definitely, if you go by strictly on the record, the Kings were a few games better than the Pels. Speaking of trades here, let's just go ahead and kick off this next topic here. We're going to do five worst trades in NBA history. I think you're going to take the five sort of more recent ones, and I'll take some more from sort of my era of, you know, big trades I remember when I was younger. So if we're going to go ahead and kick it off, give me one of your trades, and then I'll give you one of mine.
All right, this would be number five on my list, I guess. Not really that big of a trade, but it was kind of a blockbuster trade of a couple of years ago. The Rajon Rondo, Jay Crowder deal, that was a pretty – that worked so poorly for the Mavericks that they gave up Jay Crowder, who, like, was like almost a sixth man of the year in Boston and is still a very productive player for them. And Rondo, the Celtics just needed to get rid of for cap space, and obviously they just wanted to rebuild. They didn't need Rondo on their team anymore. But that was a pretty terrible trade for the Mavericks, who normally make good deals and use analytics a lot. But that was one of the poor trades in recent memory. And Dwight Powell actually came to the Mavericks in that deal, who is somehow better than Rondo the last couple of years. But that was number five on my list because – they also got a first-round pick for that as well, which they turned into, I believe, Marcus Smart. So Crowder for Rondo was definitely number five on my list. What do you got for your era of terrible trades?
I'm going with I didn't really rank them, so I'm just going to kind of off the top pick my number five, and I'm going to go with the Spurs trading Dennis Rodman to the Bulls. Rodman, when he was with San Antonio, looked washed up. He was an older player. He had some, you know, of course, off the field, even some on the field incidents. He was just a head case. So they dumped him to Chicago thinking his career was over. And of course, he went on to win three championships, led the league in rebounds all 3 years that he was there. The Bulls traded Will Perdue, which was a backup center for them. And he went to San Antonio and was a backup center there and didn't really do much. So I think that was definitely a trade in the Bulls' favor for sure.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. And usually the Spurs make fantastic moves in the offseason and in any trades that they make. And it's weird to see him on the losing end of that trade for sure.
Definitely, definitely. All right, let's go ahead and do number four. What's your number four trade?
I'm not sure if I should bump this one up just because of the value of the player who was traded, like how little value this player brings to their team versus now an MVP candidate. I may want to bump this up to like number two or three on my list, but 2 years ago, Isaiah Thomas was traded straight up for Marcus Thornton of the Boston Celtics. And that, oh my gosh, basically like an 11th man, Marcus Thornton, like can sometimes fill in for an injury here or there. But like Marcus Thornton, a like backup shooting guard for basically the third player in the MVP race right now, Isaiah Thomas, that could not have gone worse for the Phoenix Suns, honestly. They had a Dragic and Eric Bledsoe, so Isaiah Thomas is sort of the last man out of that situation, but they really messed that one up. That I think that should be bumped up to like number two or three, but that's what I got. Isaiah Thomas for Marcus Thornton, terrible, just terrible trade.
Definitely a terrible trade when you consider how well he's playing this year and what he's become. I mean, I think he's the number two leading scorer in the league right now. Like you said, he's in the MVP race. He's pound for pound the best player in the NBA, in my opinion. I think he's, I don't even know how tall he is, 5'9" maybe.
Yeah, inarguably the best inch for inch player in the NBA, pound for pound for sure. He's a beast out there. And you know, when you watch him play, like he does look 5'9" out there, and like you think he's gonna get stuffed like every time he takes it to the hole, but he somehow gets it off. It's such a, I don't know how he's successful in the league. Like I feel like John Wall would just block him like every time, but no, He's a borderline MVP candidate if Russ and Harden weren't having such great years.
Exactly, exactly. So my number four trade on my list is not quite as it's more like sort of a bridge between my era and your era. It was the Utah Jazz trading Deron Williams to the Nets, which at the time everybody was like, oh, the Nets made out. The Nets, you know, got a steal, this and that, which is kind of where my team, the Pels, are right now. Everybody just assumes that Boogie's going to go there and be successful. I put this on the list because I want to just point out that we don't really know what the trade's going to bring until a few years down the road. So Deron Williams went to New Jersey, of course, flamed out. You know, they tried to buy a championship, got Paul Pierce there. You know, Kevin Garnett went there. It just didn't work out. Deron Williams wasn't the player that he was with the Utah Jazz. Just an overall bad trade, and I think Utah sort of made out in that trade.
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely. I actually like that trade from the Jazz's perspective, because Devin Harris was a very good player in New Jersey, and they got Derek Favors, who was the third overall pick. So I actually did enjoy the trade from Utah's perspective, because I mean, Deron Williams didn't really help the Nets until they got KG and like Brook Lopez, or not Brook Lopez, and Joe Johnson there as well. Like that wasn't that great of a move, but yeah, that one's sort of an in-between your era and my era, but yeah, definitely the Utah Jazz definitely won that trade for sure.
All right, your number three worst trade is?
I had originally thought that IT somehow snuck into this deal, but it was a 3-team trade, not like a 4-team trade. It was a couple of years ago as well. It was Brandon Knight got sent to the Suns. Suns sent someone to Philly, some picks or something, and then MCW got sent to Milwaukee. And like that trade was terrible for every team involved. Like MCW was terrible in Milwaukee. He is now on the Bulls. They cut him straight up. And Brandon Knight was let's say honorable mention for an all-star team that year. He was playing very well as a member of the Bucks in 2014. And then he got sent to the Suns, and now he's like a sixth man slash backup. He doesn't get any minutes, and he will probably get moved at the deadline, I think. And then for the Sixers, the only thing that they need is a point guard, and they gave away MCW, who was pretty good for them. Like, he got a bunch of rebounds and steals and assists. He was a solid player for the Sixers, like, and now they have like TJ McConnell at point guard just to like fill in. So that trade was terrible for every team. I especially for the Bucks in that case. Brandon Knight was fantastic, and now they basically flipped Brandon Knight for Tony Snell, who was traded for MCW. So that was a terrible trade for all teams involved. But that was number three on my list, just because I'd move the Isaiah Thomas up to the three spot.
But just like the worst trade ever, like as far
yeah,
as
yeah, like no, it didn't help any team whatsoever. GMs just didn't know what they were doing. That was a terrible trade for all teams involved. So that's number three on my list. What do you got?
Number three on my list probably should be higher because the two that I have were draft day trades. So you never know what you're going to get with draft day trades. But
yeah, I didn't put any on my list because the NBA draft is really a crapshoot. We never know what's going to happen. So I didn't include any of those because hindsight is 50-50.
Yes, 50-50. I think the NBA draft is 50-50 if you're lucky.
No doubt.
But I did put two up at the top there, but we'll get into that in a minute. My number three trade is the Sixers trading Barkley to the Phoenix Suns. Of course, went on to win an MVP with the Suns. Contended for a title with the Bulls, you know, took them to six games. And of course, sort of cemented himself as a 76er, as a Sun, you know, as an all-star out there, as a superstar. So I think that was an awful trade for the Sixers, who seemed to always do something wrong.
Oh, absolutely. Yep. Same with like the Orlando Magic or the Knicks. You always know that if they're making a trade, they're on the losing end of it. And the Kings.
Definitely. All right. So what's your number two trade?
Pretty chalky one here at number two, but it was the James Harden trade. So when I first heard, so it was James Harden, Cole Aldrich, Lazar Hayward for Rockets sending Jeremy Lamb, who was like the eighth overall pick, and Kevin Martin, who was a solid player who basically did the same thing that Harden did, was just like score off the bench. I actually thought that was a solid trade for OKC. I think they actually got a steal when it first came out because Harden obviously wanted big name money and they weren't going to give it to him. But Kevin Martin did the same thing Harden did. Harden was just a sixth man at the time. So Kevin Martin basically did the same thing that Harden did for that team, just at a cheaper price tag. So I thought that would be a great trade. But obviously, we've seen Harden's the leading MVP candidate right now. And even the Rockets, Daryl Morey, he even was quoted as saying, like, yeah, we traded for Harden. We didn't think he was going to be this good. Like, well, thank you, OKC. We really appreciate it.
Right.
Because And Kevin Martin was sent over to OKC, as was Jeremy Lamb, who also could play shooting guard for them. He was a lottery pick in that year too. So I thought that was a great trade for OKC. Obviously, it has not panned out. I mean, they did make it to the Western Conference Finals and everything, but in an alternate universe, you got a dynasty with Harden, Russell, and Kevin Durant, basically three of the top six players in the league right now.
I'd be curious to go back and look at the history of the NBA, and if Harden ends up winning the MVP this year, if there's ever been a GM within, I don't know, a five-year span that drafted basically three MVPs. I mean, because Westbrook pretty much is going to win one eventually. Durant already has one.
Yep.
Harden's going to win one probably this year. And that's just a ridiculous track record. I mean, I don't think you can go with any sport. I don't think you can draft, you know, three players that are of that caliber in that sort of a time period, and that was just a ridiculous sort of span for OKC.
Absolutely. And they were three consecutive years back to back to back. So they, whatever the Thunder were doing, they did their homework on draft night. And that'll lead us into one of our later topics about teams trying to tank and trying to repeat what the Thunder did back in 2008, 2009, and 2010. So that's definitely up there as number two. What do you got for your era?
For number two, it was a toss up between one and two. I went with number with this one because the other one's a little bit closer to home for me. So I'm going with the Sonics on draft day trading one of the 50 greatest players in NBA history, Scottie Pippen, to the Bulls. Of course, you know, went on to win six championships, you know, one of the best defensive players in the league, sort of changed the small forward position. He became sort of a point forward, led the Bulls in assists most years, could shoot the three. He was basically a do-it-all kind of player, a sort of LeBron-type player before LeBron was in the NBA. Sort of changed the landscape of the whole NBA with the way he played the game.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, that's you never know on draft night. So, I mean, that my Wolves, and I was looking back, obviously the Cousins trade has gotten a lot of tweets about how terrible the Kings have drafted in the last like 5 years, how they took like Jimmer Fredette over Kawhi Leonard. They actually did make a great pick when they took Isaiah Thomas with the last pick in the draft. That's incredible value. And then they traded him to the Suns for nothing.
And you know who else they drafted in the second round? I think pick 33 or something. A guy by the name of Hassan Whiteside.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, yep, I've been seeing his name floated around like, oh, man. Could you imagine a Cousins Whiteside tandem? Like no buckets would ever be scored in the paint for opposing players. But yeah, that's, you never know on draft night. You really don't.
All right. So let's get your, number one worst trade of all time.
My worst trade, and it isn't really going to be talked about until next year, but, then it's really going to look like an embarrassment and Danny Ainge snuck his way in here again on my worst trades, being on the better end of a trade. The Celtics Nets debacle, where they sent Kevin Garnett, Paul Pierce and Jason Terry to the Nets so the Nets could make like a small playoff push. They did win one series with those guys in the playoffs, but then obviously the Nets are the worst team in the NBA right now and should be for years to come. That included the second or first overall pick, depending on the lottery this year. So the Celtics, who are the second seed in the East, now have the Nets' second overall pick that, in a very stacked draft from what I'm hearing from reports. So that's probably the worst trade in the last 5 years, in my opinion. The Celtics, oh my gosh, the Nets are just a mess, absolute mess. They will probably deal Brooke Lopez here in the trade deadline, but they have no assets or anything, and it's really because of that trade that they just have nothing to work for years to come.
And there's actually a rumor right now that I was going to get into later in the podcast, but since you went ahead and brought it up, there are actually rumors that they're trying to trade that pick for Jimmy Butler. So that could definitely put them on the map for contending for a title if they can get Butler in out there in Boston.
Oh, my gosh. That would be – oh, my word. And that's – Danny Ainge knows exactly what he's doing. He's one of the best GMs in the league. He's not gonna flip that pick for Carmelo like the Knicks wanted. That was never gonna happen.
Right.
So I do like that. If they threw in like maybe Jay Crowder, second overall pick for Jimmy Butler, maybe they probably wouldn't even have to give up Crowder. Honestly, that could definitely work in their favor. The Celtics are always sneaky.
Definitely. All right. So my number one, I kind of alluded to a little bit closer to home because it was my then Charlotte Hornets. Of course, now they're the Pelicans. They've since been returned to the Charlotte Hornets, but they were my team back then as the Charlotte Hornets, and they traded a young kid by the name of Kobe Bryant on draft day for who is now the Kings GM, Vlade Divac. That has to be one of the worst trades ever. I mean, Divac, I don't think he even lasted with us more than a couple years, and then we traded him to LA anyway. So they ended up with Kobe Bryant, and Divac was in LA, so it's kind of a really, really bad trade for us.
Yeah, I should say so. It's amazing that, I mean, he was 18 at the time coming out of high school, but that 12 other teams, and Kobe, I saw in a YouTube clip, can name every single player who was drafted in front of him, that they really let Kobe slide to the 13th overall pick in that draft. But yeah, that's got to be one of the worst draft day trades of all time for sure.
Definitely. It still pains me to this day. And people don't even remember that. They're like, you know, Bryant was drafted by the Lakers. And I'm like, nope. We drafted him and then we traded him for Vlade Divac. Worst trade ever. I can't believe that. He went on to be one of the best players in NBA history. And Divac was sort of an average center for most of his career.
Yep. Was an all-star one year, though, I think.
Yeah, I think with the Kings when he had Weber and they had White Chocolate and the whole nine.
Oh, yeah. Love me some Jason Williams.
All right. So let's go ahead and look at some players that are in the NBA right now that, you know, me and you playing DFS, Daily Fantasy, we know these guys on the bench because we play them when they get minutes. You know, some average NBA fans may not have even heard of some of these guys. But let's talk about some guys that should be getting more minutes than they do and that, you know, should be performing a lot better if their coaches would give them some minutes on the floor. Who you got?
So this is what I call like the is sleeping with coach's wife award, really. Like all these guys are excellent NBA players. They just don't get any minutes, and we can't, you and me and writers, we can't figure out why they aren't getting any minutes. They're very solid players and they just don't get minutes and we just can't figure out why. So a couple guys I got on this list, and these of course can be trade candidates, of course, since we are talking trade deadline, guys who don't really have a spot on their team, but could help another squad. One of my favorite players in the league who, for some reason, especially the fact that the Pistons are trying to deal Andre Drummond, from what I've heard from some reports, is Boban never gets any minutes. And I love Boban out there. He's fantastic. 7'3". He had like a couple of years ago, obviously it's on a per minute basis, but with the Spurs, he had like a PER of like 28, like a couple years ago, just cause he's not a starter by any means, but he is probably the best second line player in the league. Just cause like Cole Aldridge of my Timberwolves cannot guard like Boban, who's 7'3". Like he just dominates these guys on the second line cause he's so big. So I don't understand why Boban doesn't get any more minutes. He's not injured or anything, but, yeah, they need to get him on the court, especially the fact that the Pistons are trying to deal Drummond too. I don't understand why SVP SVP doesn't play him.
Yeah, I don't get it either. I don't understand why they even picked him up. I mean, I think he was sort of a Daily Fantasy hero last year a couple times whenever he got minutes when they rested some players. You know, he got some minutes. Everybody was pretty much jumping on board at minimum salary. You know, and then he gets this huge contract that, you know, he was kind of talked into. He wanted to settle for less and stay with the Spurs. But
yes, he did.
Popovich sat him down and said, look, there's millions of dollars that we can't pay you that you can go somewhere else and get. And he did that. I don't know if he regrets going and doing that because now he's not playing where he was getting at least some minutes in San Antonio. But, you know, he'll get his money and then maybe eventually get his chance to actually play.
I'm always an avid box score checker on the score app, NBA.com app, and there was a game like 3-4 weeks ago where Boban had 21 minutes played, had 19 points and 16 rebounds in 21 minutes on the floor. It's like, give this guy some minutes. He can just dominate these guys out there.
Like,
it's
what,
ridiculous.
What is he doing, or what does the coach see that doesn't allow him to be on the floor more? I don't understand. Like, what is it
that— I truly don't either. And, you know, I'm slipping my mind right now, the coach of the Pistons, it's
Stan Van Gundy.
Yeah, Van Gundy, Stan Van Gundy, SVG. He doesn't play Tobias Harris either, who is an excellent player who they gave up a lot for the Magic. He never plays him either. He plays, like, Stanley Johnson and like Marcus Morris instead of Tobias Harris. So his rotations are always super weird, but the fact that I saw that box score, that's one of the most ridiculous box scores on a per minute basis I've ever seen by Boban. I think it was against the Bucks or something. Yeah. 19 and 16 and like 20 minutes on the floor, like just obnoxious. So I don't know why he's not getting minutes. Another guy I got on here who, if he wasn't getting minutes before, he's definitely not getting minutes right now. After that trade was Terrence Jones of your Pelicans never
Amen.
Gets any playing time. He never, and he's a fantastic player. He's always getting boards and always a DFS sleeper. I don't know why Terrence Jones never gets any minutes. And analytics show Elvin Gentry just hates analytics for some reason, but analytics show that the best lineup pre, obviously, Boogie and AD lineups now for the Pelicans was when AD is playing the five and then Terrence Jones is on the floor with him at the four. That's the best lineup the Pelicans can produce.
Yep,
and they never played it. They never play Terrence Jones ever. Yep. I don't understand why.
I think the one game, too, when Anthony Davis was out and they had Terrence Jones in there, and he, blew up. He had, 40 points or something ridiculous. I can't remember what the exact score was, but I know he, blew up and had a ton of points. And, then they get Anthony Davis back, and he goes back to the bench and gets no minutes.
I actually wrote in a column this last summer about, the top five, sneaky finds of the free agency season last summer was, and number two on my list was Terrence Jones. They got him for the veteran minimum the Pelicans got him for. That's, and he's an excellent player. They just, I don't know, again, sleeping with coach's wife or something. I don't know why they just don't give Terrence Jones any minutes. Any guys, I got a couple more on my list here, but any other guys that come to mind for you?
The guy at the top of my list now has been getting more minutes lately. I think it's because of the trade deadline. They want to move this guy, but a few years ago, he was probably the free agent catch everybody wanted. He was a big name out there, toured a few teams, ended up signing with the Milwaukee Bucks. And, of course, that's Greg Monroe.
That's what I was going
to
guess.
Yeah, he could have gone to New York. He could have gone to a few different teams. He went to the Bucks. And then, I guess, Jason Kidd, for some reason, just hates him. I mean, he's starting guys like John Henson over him and
Thon Maker gets minutes now.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. And whenever this guy's in, I mean, it's just like you were mentioning with Boban, how he's so efficient. I mean, he'll play 20 minutes and get, 15 rebounds and, 12, 14 points. And it's just ridiculous.
And like six assists, too.
Yeah, it's insane.
Exactly. He's probably, of all these players, I legitimately have no idea. There's no analytics to back up anything. I don't know why Greg Monroe doesn't get any minutes out there. Come on. He was the best player on the Pistons a couple years ago, and now he's like the seventh man on the Bucks. It doesn't make any sense. He's young. He's a solid player. He was definitely on my list too. One of the more terrible trades of the past few years that didn't make it in the top five for me was last week. From the Magic standpoint, trading Serge Ibaka for Terrence Ross and a first round pick is when you think back to that, they traded Serge Ibaka for Oladipo and the 11th overall pick.
Yeah.
That's gotta be one of the worst trades ever too. They traded Oladipo, who is a stud in my opinion. I think he doesn't get a lot of minutes in OKC, but he was a stud for the Magic, and the 11th overall pick basically just got traded for Terrence Ross, who's terrible, and the 28th overall pick when the Raptors get kicked out in the Eastern Conference Finals. That is an awful trade. And involving the Raptors, I don't understand. They signed him, and I thought it was a pretty good sign this summer. Was Jared Sullinger never gets any minutes for the Raptors, and they need a four. I think that they'd play him at least a little bit. But
I think
Jared Sullinger
came back from injury, and it just looked out of shape and slow, I think.
Yeah, he's a big boy. He's a big boy at a 6'7", 6'8", frame, playing like the four or the five. But, I mean, he was fantastic for the Celtics, was a excellent PER player. I don't understand why he never got any minutes, but it's probably because of injury and, of course, that he's looks out of shape this year. But it led them to want to trade for Serge Ibaka that Sullinger just could not give them anything this year. But He could maybe get traded at the deadline for someone, maybe some team like the Suns or Timberwolves could use a player like Sullinger.
Definitely. Another guy I got on my list, it's not really a question of why he isn't getting minutes. It's more of where can he go where he can get some minutes, and it's Allen Crabbe. Of course, he's playing behind two of the best guards in the league, in Lillard and McCollum. So that's the reason why he's not getting minutes. But when he has gotten minutes, he's been really good. I mean, he filled in for a while there when Dame was out for a few games, filled in, quite well. I think he's one of the top five in three-point percentage right now in the NBA. So if this guy was to get traded to somewhere else, Portland does needs a couple pieces here and there to truly get back to what they were before, before last year. And I think Allen Crabbe could be that piece that they move. Not sure where he'll end up, but I think wherever he goes, he'll end up being a borderline all-star.
I absolutely had him on my list as well. But the thing about Alan Crabb is that they paid him $80 million this offseason for 4 years. He's making $20 million a year. Alan Crabb is making a dub every year. Like, it's not the fact that where he needs to go, like, get your money's worth. Play Alan Crabb more than like 9-10 minutes a game. Like, you're paying him $20 million to sit on the bench. It doesn't make sense. And I don't think they're going to be able to move Alan Crabb because his contract is so ridiculous that he is not a $20 million a year player. That's ridiculous. And I know it's
I actually missed that part about his contract, but you're right. Now that you mentioned it, I do remember them signing to a big contract, and
I don't think they're not going to be able to get him off their roster unless a team like the stupid like Nets or Kings like really want him. But Crabb, they need to get more usage out of him, and he needs to see the floor more if they're going to be paying him $20 million a year to be the like ninth man. It just doesn't make sense. So that's the most confusing one on this list, I think, just in terms of a monetary value. You pay this guy $20 million and he just plays like 15 minutes a game behind like Mo Harkless. I don't get that one at all.
Exactly. You got any more on your list before we move on to the next topic?
One that hits close to home, who has been playing a lot more minutes lately, is Shabazz Muhammad of my Timberwolves. Thibodeau hated Shabazz Muhammad when he first got there. He was giving him no minutes, and he is our glorified sixth man. He's an excellent sixth man. Same with like these Boban, Greg Monroe kind of guys. Like, he'll be out there for like 20 minutes and get like 18 points. He's extremely efficient out there. He has been getting a lot more minutes lately. He's starting to warm up to Tibbs, but I didn't understand why Shabazz wasn't getting a lot of minutes to start off the year, but it's definitely coming around now, and especially with Zach LaVine out for the year with a torn ACL. But those are just a couple of guys I just don't understand why they're not getting their money's worth out there. Any more on your list?
I got one more on my list, and this is a guy that's kind of buried behind a guy that's better than him, but I think if he was to get moved somewhere else, I think there's rumors going around that he will get moved, and that's Brandon Knight from the Suns. He's buried, of course, behind Bledsoe, and then they got Booker as their shooting guard, so he doesn't get much court time. Unfortunately, when he has gotten the court time, he hasn't really shown what he can do. I think the last time he played for Bledsoe when he was down for a game, really stunk up the joint. I think he had like 2 buckets and 2 turnovers or something, because I played him actually in Daily Fantasy and he killed me. But I think if he was to go to a team where he was more of the focal point, where he can be that scoring sort of do-it-all kind of point guard, I think he can definitely be a good piece for a certain team.
Oh, another one that I just thought of that I had marked down was he did play terribly when he started the year, but he showed that he could really, really run a team well the last couple of years. And in Philadelphia was Ish Smith never gets any minutes for Stan Van Gundy. And this one doesn't make any sense because Reggie Jackson, who's their starter, is playing terribly right now. So you may as well try and switch up the mojo and give Ish Smith some more minutes. But I don't really understand why Ish isn't getting more minutes, just the fact that Jackson has been playing terribly and they're trying to make the playoffs.
But, I don't understand the whole thing with Ish Smith in general. I mean, how many times has he been cut in the last couple of years? And he does nothing but score and, you know, put up points. I don't understand.
And, he's an assist and point. He racks up the assists and the points every night out.
We had him funny. With the Pelicans for a while, and I was like, why did we get rid of that guy? It doesn't make any sense.
Exactly. He always is productive, like you said, he's like one of those fringe NBA players, man. He like is like on the verge of like not having a job, then like gets signed by the Sixers and puts up like 20 and 10 every night. It's weird.
Yeah, I don't get it. I don't get it at all. All right, let's go ahead and move on to the next topic here that I got. So the thing right now in the NBA is sort of like the tanking and getting the good picks and stacking young talent. And there's 3 teams that have kind of done this, and they've stacked the young talents, but it hasn't really panned out. Now, one team on this list actually may be on their way to turning things around, but the Wolves, the Lakers, and the Sixers have all had very high draft picks over the last couple years, and all 3 teams, as it stands right now, are still pretty bad. Is stacking like those kind of picks and those young players a good thing for NBA teams? I know we do it a lot in Daily Fantasy. It's a good thing to do in Daily Fantasy, but for the NBA, do you think stacking these young players is a good idea?
Well, it's a very interesting concept that basically came to light through the 76ers the last couple of years. That they came up with a name for it called tanking, which is just basically not incentivizing your players to lose, but realizing that your star players aren't going to re-sign with your team and trying to get high draft picks. And, you know, there's some mixed feelings around the league. Adam Silver, of course, hates it. It sort of makes the NBA look like a joke. But, you know, any GM, any team owner who says they're tanking, it's a lie. Every single team wants to have the kind of success that the Golden State Warriors had, where they were just sort of a fringe, middle-of-the-road team to they're the Warriors now. Like, every single GM owner, they want to win in this league, and they will do whatever it takes to try and win. But the thing is you have, like, let's talk about the 76ers. Last year they won barely 10 games, barely cracked double digits, something that the Nets are trying to do right now. You have 3-4 years of terrible basketball, just stacking these high draft picks, but just getting one player, like, a couple years ago, they got Nerlens Noel, very high draft pick. Like, Nerlens Noel isn't going to change your franchise. So then they have another terrible season of losing, basically a wasted year in the franchise's eyes of not making the playoffs, not competing, being the worst team in the league. Then they get Jahlil Okafor. They got Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid. But, like, they've wasted, like, is the waste, I want your opinion on this, is the waste of, like, 4 or 5 years of, like, being the worst team in the NBA really worth it to, like, sneak in as, like, the sixth seed 1 year? Is that really, like, I don't really get it, I guess. What are your thoughts on that, Jeff?
Yeah, I actually wrote an article about this and, you know, how to fix the NBA draft and this whole tanking thing. And I just, it's not good. I mean, it hasn't worked as of yet. Like I said, the Sixers might be turning that corner. They look a little bit better than they have over recent years. But there's no guarantee that top 1, 2, 3, or 4 pick or whatever you end up with is going to be the next, you know, whoever, the next LeBron James. You know, you get stuck with guys that just don't perform. Like you said, Nerlens Noel, you know, he's a good player, don't get me wrong, but he's not the franchise changer. He's not going to take you from being a bad team to being a good team. And I just think that doing that just it ruins the game of basketball, honestly. I mean, when you have teams that you know that aren't trying to win, it kind of ruins the sport in general. And I wrote an article Absolutely. About this and how to fix the draft. You know, I wish that I can, like, forward it to Adam Silver and see if he can read it and see what my thoughts are. But basically what my thought was, and this was written last year when the Detroit Pistons and the Chicago Bulls were coming down to the last game of the season to who makes it into the playoffs for that 8th seed. Detroit ended up winning and getting the 8th seed and getting swept in the first round. And my argument was that the Chicago Bulls actually made out better. You know, granted, they didn't get a good, you know, high draft pick, but they had a chance to get the high draft pick. Like, could you imagine if the Pistons played their hearts out in that last game of the regular season, made it to be the 8th seed, they get swept by the, you know, Cavaliers, and then the Bulls end up winning the draft lottery and getting the number one overall pick? I mean, you'd be happy to be a Chicago Bull and happy you missed the playoffs.
So yeah, that's definitely an interesting theory.
So my thought was, and I looked back at the history of the NBA, and only 3 times in the history of the NBA has a team that was seeded lower than the 3 seed made it to the finals. Not won the finals, just made it. So there's a 4 seed, a 6 seed, and I think a 7 or 8 seed that have made it to the finals. So my thought is you extend the draft lottery up until those last 4 seeds. So the 4 teams that get home court advantage don't go into the lottery. Everybody else goes into the lottery. Everybody else also has the same chance to win the lottery. There's no, you know, weighted where you get a better record. No, you know, everything gets the same chance. Now the catch is, when you win the lottery, you're exempt from the next 3 years. So you get your top player. You won the lottery. Congratulations. Now you got this player. You signed for a 3-year deal if you take the third option in the 3rd year. But you can't win the lottery for those 3 years. You got to take your player and make him be the NBA star that you want him to be. And I think once I did the math and I figured it out, when you take all the exempt players out, you take the 8 teams that won't make, you know, that make the playoffs, that are top teams, ends up being 13, 14 teams a year that are in the NBA lottery, which is what it is right now. And everyone has the same amount of chance. So when you're that sort of fringe NBA team, like, do I try to make a push for the playoffs, or do I tank back a few spots to get a better, you know, draft position? it won't matter anymore. Now it's like, no matter what I do, I'm going to get a good draft pick, or at least a chance to get a top draft pick. I might as well play my heart out to try to make it to the playoffs. And at least then we would get, you know, a playoff berth, and we may even get a good draft pick. It would take that whole tanking thing out of the equation.
That's a very interesting theory. Yeah, and I saw Mike and Mike had a theory if they, I don't think it's as good as yours, but they said like the last team new lottery system that would really incentivize teams to be like basically mediocre, like an 8-8 team in the NFL, is have the first overall pick go to the last team that didn't make the playoffs. So in that case, it would be the Chicago Bulls of last year, get the first overall pick. That would just like incentivize teams to try and make the playoffs, I guess. It's an interesting theory for sure. But, you know, when you look at these teams who are trying to tank, not trying to, but just inevitably are, and I think my Timberwolves are one of them, is that we had some terrible years there, of course, getting the first overall pick. Wiggins, just won the Wiggins rookie year, Timberwolves won 16 games, which is just absolutely embarrassing. And, of course, nobody in the Minneapolis era went to any of any Timberwolves games. And so that's the price that you have to pay is – and then we got Karl-Anthony Towns and Zach LaVine, of course. But, like, are these wasted years of just being, like, one of the worst teams in the NBA really worth it, like, to guess on these draft picks? Like we've said, the NBA draft is kind of a crapshoot. You can get a Draymond Green, a Jimmy Butler, a Nikola Pekovic, Isaiah Thomas all in the second round. Like, I don't – it just doesn't make a lot of sense. And, like, same with the Lakers. Lakers are in the same – same boat here. They basically tanked the last 3 years, and each year from 2014 to 15 to 16, they've every year have set a franchise loss for records every single year in a row. So, and then of course they get draft picks like Julius Randle, Brandon Ingram, D'Angelo Russell, but those players, they're still terrible. The Lakers are still the worst team in the NBA besides the Nets and the Suns. So like, is it really worth it for them to tank? Like, Ingram and D'Angelo Russell are playing terribly right now. It just doesn't make – it's really confusing. And, you know, teams like that who are – and I think my Wolves are in a lot better spot than the Lakers and Sixers are. But is it really worth it for them to lose all these games and then try and guess at these, like, number 2-3 overall picks? It's an interesting argument for sure.
Definitely. I think so far we can say that it has not worked out for most of those teams.
I think the team that actually has a shot, but for some reason the injuries are really like messing up the process, is the 76ers. Joel Embiid looks great. Saric looks like a solid number four. Ben Simmons has yet to see the court. If you get Ben Simmons, Joel Embiid, and like trade for like Ricky Rubio and get Jaleel off the court, like, that could be a solid like 6-5-6 seed in the East. If you got like Rubio running with all those guys, that could be a solid team. Like, but for some reason they draft like Ben Simmons, who just refuses to play basically. And then Embiid missed 2 years of young, valuable basketball years at age 19 and 20. So it's tough. Like the 76ers, was it worth it? Like they're still a terrible team right now. They're third worst in the East right now. Is it really worth it for your franchise to be the worst team in the NBA for possible playoff berth in like the next 4 years? And then the last problem of the equation is that these guys, like, and I'm very, very concerned about this with my Timberwolves, is that if we don't make the playoffs this year, which we're not going to, and then next year maybe sneak in as the eighth seed, like Wiggins, Towns, and LaVine aren't going to want to play in Minnesota anymore if they're not competitive and turn into a team like the Warriors. So then you have to start the process all over again of rebuilding and trying to get these high draft picks. And it can really set your franchise back decades almost with this tanking process. It really can.
Definitely. And you have a strike against you because of Minnesota and their climate. You know, it's cold.
Yeah,
nobody
wants to play here. Nope.
Exactly.
So I wouldn't want to.
So yeah, definitely got something against you there. I think you're right though. I think it so far has not panned out for most teams. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Absolutely. Well, just I thought the 76ers were so close. Like, Embiid looks like an all-star. Ben Simmons is probably going to be like a borderline all-star. Saric has been playing really good, but they just they wasted so many years. And if these guys, like, Embiid's contract's up and after next year, and like, are these guys really going to sign with them? Like, you're just wasting years of your franchise, honestly.
Yep. Agreed. All right, let's do a little addition by subtraction. Let's look at a few teams around the league with some players, and if they were to get rid of said player, could actually be a better team.
Okay, yep, I got a couple names. If you want to start it off, I'm more than happy to have you give me a couple names.
I think the biggest one for me, and it's been the one and sort of talked around, and that's Carmelo Anthony. And not because not because Anthony's a bad player or that he can't go somewhere else and be successful. It's just become a virus. You know what I mean? It's all they talk about in New York. You know, is Melo getting traded? What's Phil Jackson tweeting about? Is this what he's talking about? This and that. It's just become such a PR nightmare that I just don't think that
it's a circus. It's a circus in New York.
Exactly. And it's just not something that can be fixed. I mean, even if Phil Jackson came out tomorrow and said everything's hunky-dory and we're great and we're going forward with Melo, it's not going to fix things. People are going to know what's up. They're going to know what happened behind the scenes. They need to figure out a way to get Melo out of there. Melo may have to, you know, waive his no-trade clause or whatever it is that he has in his contract just to go somewhere, get out of New York. You know, otherwise he's wasting the rest of his career. I mean, I think he's... You know, he's up there in age. He's not quite as old as some of these players, but he's not young anymore for sure. And if he wants to make any kind of noise in the NBA, he needs to get out of New York.
Absolutely. And the thing is that I don't think he's going to get traded at the deadline. I really think he's going to stay as a Knick after this deadline. And that's got to be, oh man, Knicks fans, what they want and what I think is best for the franchise is for them to build around Porzingis, tank this year, get a good draft pick, I guess, and just really build around Porzingis, because Derrick Rose came out and said, called them a super team this offseason, and they're like the 10th seed in the East. That's going to be the most embarrassing statement of the NBA in NBA history if they called themselves a super team and they're like the second team out of the playoffs. It's embarrassing. And the Joakim Noah contract is terrible, 4 years for $72 million. That's an awful contract. So can you think of a team that would take Melo on right now? I can't think of one. I truly can't.
I can think of some teams that might take him on, but that he won't waive his trade clause to go to.
I mean, the Pelicans being one of them.
Pelicans, yeah. Pelicans are definitely a spot. Now, I did see right before I got on the podcast tonight that Isaiah Thomas followed Carmelo Anthony on Twitter, and then the Celtics official account also followed Melo on Twitter just in the last 30 minutes. So of course the rumor there is that Melo's going to Boston. So I don't know if that's going to come to fruition or not. I think even Isaiah Thomas tweeted the little eyeball emoji con, sort of like, wow, look who we just got. Everyone assumed it was Jimmy Butler, but then once everyone followed Carmelo, they started to assume maybe it was Melo going to Boston. So I guess we'll find out over the next few days what's going to happen.
Oh my, that's I really want the Celtics to get Jimmy Butler instead of Melo, but maybe they just can't get the deal done. But that's definitely an addition by subtraction for sure. A couple names that come to mind for me is we just talked about him, the 76ers. Jahlil Okafor has just been a cancer since he was drafted by him with the third overall pick. It even started on came out of the podium after they had all their draft picks released, and like he sort of, do you remember this, where he threw the jersey down sort of on on the table, like he was just like really upset to be there. That so things did not start off. Then he got into a fight, and he never gets any minutes either. So like Jahlil is definitely going to be, and they really want to build around Embiid, who's the real deal in my opinion. So I think Jahlil is going to, but you know, the thing is when other teams around the league know that a Jahlil or a Melo is a addition by subtraction guys, their trade value just goes right down the toilet. Like they know that the 76ers don't want Jahlil that much, and that they can definitely, like, if I saw the Pelicans were trying to trade for him, and that could be like they might be able to get like a second round pick and like Terrence Jones over to Philly to get like Jahlil Okafor, because their trade value just tanks when they know that they're not happy being there, and that that they're really struggling. And Jahlil has not been a great NBA player up to this point.
All right. You got any more that you want to mention real quick?
I have like half the Lakers roster on here, but a couple that actually would be an addition if they lost them. D'Angelo Russell should not be on the Lakers anymore. Honestly, he's on the verge of getting traded. I don't know what team would want to take on his shenanigans. Same with Jahlil. I don't really see those guys like NBA GMs, like the good ones, at least like in Atlanta, the Spurs, the Warriors, they don't take on guys like that. They look for character and high basketball IQ for their players. And D'Angelo has just been a cancer in LA. And I think I think you can agree with me on this, that he's probably the number one reason why the Lakers are just terrible, is their point guard just cannot get it together on or off the court.
Yeah, they invested a lot in him and put a lot of faith in him, and he hasn't really come through yet. So I will agree with you on that. I have one similar to you as far as entire roster. I think the Chicago Bulls need to hit the reset button.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I think the moves that they made over the last few years have just been sort of baffling. I don't understand what they were doing when they got Wade and MCW and Rondo.
And it's a real shame, because Jimmy Butler's a once-in-a-generation player on the offense and defensive end, and they're probably going to end up trading him, or he's not going to re-sign with the Bulls. So, yeah, and of course, because of the whole Jordan and Pippen era, Chicago Bulls fans have huge high expectations for their franchise, and I don't know what the Bulls are going to do. They're in one of those treadmill teams who are like not good enough to make the playoffs, but not good enough to get a good draft pick. So it's a really tough situation for the Bulls. That's a good answer. The Bulls roster definitely needs some tinkering. Obviously, like, Nick Young should not be on the Lakers anymore. Lou Williams shouldn't be on the Lakers anymore. One that came to mind that we mentioned earlier in the podcast, Reggie Jackson has been really bad for the Pistons, but you and I played DFS. He was excellent like the last couple of years. Like, he's always putting up like 25 and 12 in the box score, but he has been really bad this year. And I think a change of scenery would be nice for Reggie Jackson in Detroit. I don't think they want him anymore. I don't think he wants to be there anymore. So that would be an interesting one that I think he actually might get dealt this deadline. Of course, Brandon Knight's on there too as addition by subtraction. He needs a new change of scenery too.
Definitely. All right, so we're running against the clock here, so we're going to skip over a couple of these topics that I had written down. Let's get to the All-Star game and all the events. First of all, did you watch all the events? And then second of all, did you enjoy it? And if you didn't, how do we improve it?
I didn't watch the three-point contest because I don't need to see who puts the ball in the hoop that many times. I don't like that event very much. I saw Eric Gordon won it. That's pretty contrarian. That's pretty cool that he was able to win it. And I saw a stat that a player who was on in the NBA finals the last 6 years has been on who has won the 3-point contest. It was like Clay, Curry, Kyrie. Like, the last 6 years, you go back and they've had at least one player in the finals who had won that 3-point contest.
Interesting.
So looks like the Rockets are going in the NBA finals this year, I guess. But yeah, I watched the game. I watched it, and it was pretty good. I really liked the high flying dunks. Obviously, the defense is subpar. We'll say subpar defense on both ends, but
you're being kind.
That was pretty cool. For Anthony Davis had one hell of a night last night. Got Boogie on his team in his own home city of New Orleans, putting up 50, breaking the All-Star game record. Really cool to see for a player who's got a good head on his shoulders like AD.
Yeah, I too missed both the dunk contest and 3-point contest. I was at work, so I didn't see any of it. But I did hear that it was one of the worst, you know, All-Star sort of events in recent memory after having one of the best last year. And I think the only way to improve it is to get the stars out. Like, the only way to make the dunk contest better is to get the superstars in there, the ones that everybody wants to see. We don't want to see, I mean, no offense to Aaron Gordon from last year, but no one knew who he was. We were surprised, but you know, unless you played daily fantasy, you probably had no idea who this kid was. You had no reason to watch the dunk contest. And a lot of people didn't watch the dunk contest and didn't find out until the next day what he did. And then we're sort of like in awe of him. But you know, going into it, it wasn't something that was hyped up. There was no big name sort of guy that was in that dunk contest to really make it worth watching. And I just think until they get, you know, those kind of things fixed or, you know, do something with the dunk contest and the three-point contest. I mean, the three-point contest was nice. It was kind of a joke that, though, the number one three-point shooting player right is in the NBA right now was not in the contest, and that's Otto Porter from the Washington Wizards. Of course, you know, me being in Washington, is all I heard, you know, leading up to the All-Star game was, you know, not only did Bradley Beal not make it as a replacement, you know, for Kevin Love, but the leading three-point shooter right now in the NBA isn't in the three-point contest. Like, how ridiculous is that?
Absolutely. That's offensive to Otto Porter, who isn't a household name by any means, but yeah, he definitely should have been in it. And I watched the end of the dunk contest, I guess. They tried to be creative, like with the times, like Aaron Gordon did one where there was a drone involved that like dropped it for an alley-oop. That was kind of interesting. DJ Khaled was out there with DeAndre Jordan in a dunk where he dunked over like a DJ spin table. But the weirdest thing is that you're right. The stars aren't going to do it. Like, I don't know why. They need to incentivize something for these players to get out there. Like, that's the only way that they can make the dunk contest better. The guy from the Suns, Derek Jones Jr., has zero dunks in game this year and was able to participate just because he's like a freak athlete. But like, what, they really need bigger names in the dunk contest. But the one that the winning dunk by Glenn Robinson III was actually really cool. It was like he jumped over three people standing in a row, and it was a reverse dunk. It was pretty cool. But other than that, nothing you missed there, Jeff. And then of course Porzingis won the skills challenge, which is pretty cool, seeing a big man win it for the second straight year after Cat won it last year.
Cat won it last year. Yep, that's kind of cool.
The skills challenge is really dumb because it's all contingent on who makes the three pointer at the end.
Yeah.
And they're both NBA players. They can like dribble through like those posts and like pass like a 5 foot into that like little net. So it's basically the 3-point contest 2.0, like who can make the last 3-pointer before the other person. Like, exactly. That's all the skills challenges.
Exactly. Yep. Now the All-Star game for me, you know, with the lack of defense, you know, as an NBA fan, it's sort of hard to watch, you know, because they're not playing no defense whatsoever. But at the same time, the people that it's made for really are the kids. And I think the kids want to see high-flying dunks. They want to see guys shooting the ball from half court or just jacking up threes. That's what they want to see. So I think the All-Star game in what it's supposed to be is actually pretty decent. I think it's a little bit ridiculous as an adult watching it, knowing that they're playing zero defense. But at the same time, it's an All-Star game. You don't want people to get hurt. So I think for what it is, I think the All-Star game is actually pretty decent.
I think the idea of the All-Star game is a super cool concept in all sports, just getting the best players of that year all to compete in one game. But every single one besides baseball is super lame, and it's just because they don't want to get injured. But like, if, let's say, the All-Star game was like there was some incentive that like the players were trying their absolute hardest, the All-Star game MVP would be like the coolest award on the planet. Like, you were the best, like Paul George, LeBron James, Russell Westbrook, all these guys trying, giving their 100% in a game, whoever like won the best player in that game, that would be an excellent, excellent award for them to have on their trophy case. Like, All-Star game MVP would be a super, super awesome award for them to have. But it is what it is, and it probably will never change in our lifetime. So
I was listening to talk radio today, and one of the listeners tweeted into the host, you know, an idea of how to make it better. And I think it was a good idea. It would never happen, but it would be hilarious. And that was, of course, they said, you know, the winning team, you know, each player gets $1 million. And that $1 million comes out of the pocket of the losing team. I guarantee you they'd be playing their butts off if that was the case.
Yeah, no doubt. Maybe not LeBron, but everybody else would.
Yeah, definitely. All right, man. Hey, that's a wrap on the podcast tonight. I think we touched on most of the big NBA topics. As usual, I like having you on, talking some NBA. I think you're one of my go-to NBA podcast guys. You know, we could talk NBA all night probably. But once again, I appreciate you having on, man. I hope to have you on again in a few weeks.
Absolutely. Can I just make one quick point before we go? And sure. I just wanted to touch on this just a little bit because it is something that I was very surprised that the NBA went forward on. And that's that as of 2017 and in the 2018 season, the NBA and we saw it in All-Star Weekend actually snuck an advertisement on the jerseys, that little Kia logo that everybody saw on the All-Star jerseys.
Yes.
And as of the season next year, all teams will have some sort of affiliation or logo on their NBA jerseys. And they've had that idea since like 2012 and like they were going to implement it in 2014. And I thought that the NBA had just scrapped that idea. Like Adam Silver said, like, oh, this makes us look weak. Like no other leagues are doing it. And it really does make the NBA look kind of weak. Like the fact that they need endorsements to make more money, like even the MLB and the NHL, who are really struggling to retain their fans, especially in the youth community right now for baseball and the sport of hockey too. Like it really makes the NBA look pretty bad in my opinion. And I think the idea is going to get scrapped after they realize that it's not a great idea this upcoming season. Maybe it'll take a couple years, but what do you think on the whole ads on the jerseys thing?
I think the only league that can pull it off would be the NBA, only because the NBA, more than any other league, is built on its stars and its stars promoting different products. I mean,
yep, absolutely.
If an NBA player signs with, you know, Nike or Adidas and has a new shoe come out, that shoe becomes the hottest selling shoe in the market just because so-and-so owns it. And that's not the case with a lot of things. I mean, Peyton Manning puts on Under Armour. No one's running out to get Under Armour shirts. You know what I mean? It's not quite the same thing as with the NBA. Whereas the NBA, if they're going to endorse Kia, for example, I mean, those Kia commercials where the average player, you know, average person is trying to be like an NBA player because he drives the car, they're hilarious. And I think the NBA, yeah, if they can do that kind of thing. Funny. Yeah, if anybody can do it, it'd be the NBA that can pull it off just because of the visibility of their superstars. I think more than any other league, I think even people that aren't NBA fans could recognize LeBron James or, you know, those kind of guys, where if you showed someone Bryce Harper, I don't know if my wife would notice who Bryce Harper is, but if you show her LeBron James, she knows who that is for sure.
Yep, absolutely. And it's a really a double-edged sword because the D-League and WNBA, they both have jersey affiliations and logos on their jerseys, but that's because those leagues don't make money. They're struggling, and so they have to have some sort of an endorsement to make more revenue. But from a marketing standpoint, it's kind of interesting in the advertising world, we talk about reach and cost per thousand, and that's the cost that it takes to reach 1,000 viewers of your logo advertisement. And I think that the NBA, from a revenue standpoint, like when you have so much noise, when you're watching commercials, TV endorsements, like nobody remembers the exact ad that McDonald's had during their NBA game, but you remember subliminally or not subliminally seeing that little Kia logo on the jersey. So that's reaching people are there to, the players are their bigger, the NBA's biggest asset. They're there to see LeBron James take on Westbrook, Durant, and having that little logo out there, like every 5 seconds you see it on their jersey. Like that's definitely a huge new medium that the NBA is tapping into. I just think it makes the NBA look kind of weak and looking like they're very greedy and selfish, in my opinion.
I wonder how much it would cost to get my logo on one of those jerseys. A little going for two logo on the back there.
Oh, I love it. I love that idea. It's just like a 25-cent patch that they sew on. I mean, that's exactly. It can't be that much.
I'll multiply that by how many players in the NBA, and we're done. That's what I'll pay.
Yep. You just lost your mortgage if you do that.
Yeah, exactly.
Good talking to you, Jeff.
All Thanks right, man. Hey, you have a good night, and we'll, like I said, we'll talk to you maybe in a few weeks. After the trade deadline, everything settles down, we'll get you back on.
Sounds good. Take care, my friend.
You too.